From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Cairo 7 runs a story about eggs that I don't believe because I eat more eggs than anybody else. I exclusively eat eggs. It's the only part of my diet. Did you know that, Spike?
I didn't think you could eat 5 dozen eggs, Jack. I'm sorry I bet against you.
I am
you.
Like,
I would be rolling egg or, you know, being the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on. Yep, that's me and the president eating eggs together. I'm a proverbial Gaston. San Juan County is encouraged by the initial results of a 32-hour work week. But before we get to all that, Mr. Frank Shires, local media legend and cartoonist extraordinaire.
Hey,
Shires creator.
Thank you very much.
I actually got a taste of one of Frank's cartoons. Made me laugh out loud. It was a, but you know they're introducing grizzlies into
yeah.
the.
Was this one you told us
so
about last week?
Yeah, I was going to do it. So good.
Nice.
Now radio is a auditory medium, so we can't exactly show it, but it's a very very funny comic.
Look
Frank,
it up.
You sent me a text today.
Yes.
In your very passive aggressive way that I.
Oh,
love.
I thought I was extremely polite. Wasn't I?
So
anybody that saw it would know that.
Frank said that I had the audacity. I don't even know if I
did not use that word.
Frank implied that I had the audacity.
Okay, that's different.
I'll read the exact text. Frank.
Oh, good.
Okay. Sure.
Because Frank and I are very good friends. Frank is a dear friend of mine for many, many years. And he says to me in my time of mourning over in my time of need, he says, did I correctly hear you attack Trump supporters who ask, quote, are you better off now than were you 4 years ago? End quotation. Devastated I was.
You were.
Devastated.
Why?
By one Frank Shires.
I listened.
Did I attack people who said that?
I think it was in the mailbag segment, went after some poor soul that dared to write to you, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is
right.
that right?
And that is a...
That's what happened.
That is a bad meme that people use, thinking that that is somehow going to convince people that Donald Trump in some way ran a better economy than Joe Biden does. The argument that I make is that they are both neoliberals and therefore, as a result of their neoliberalism, produced a trash economy. Donald Trump just had the privilege of coming on an economic upswing post-Obama years, and almost all the data pans us out in terms of median income, so on and so forth.
Would you agree with all those points?
Yes.
No? No?
Frank, jeez, I just made the best argument I've ever made.
You don't think that Trump started at halftime up 7-0 and Biden started at halftime down 14-0?
I think it's a misreading of what that says.
Okay.
And it comes because, frankly, you people are babies.
You people.
You people. As
you mean
in
that
you,
in the kindest sense.
You, Spike.
I gotcha.
And you, Jack and Laura.
Are babies.
You're babies.
In what sense?
You weren't alive in 1980. Well,
dude, you know how old I am.
Yes, I do.
Why don't you talk to Laura and Jack for a couple minutes?
This.
I'm going to go get some Metamucil.
Easy,
and I got a hard-boiled egg in the other room.
I didn't mean that you weren't alive. I guess I meant that you weren't sentient because you were a child. Were you
so
not?
Well.
I guess you must have been about, 12?
I voted in 1980 for Ronald Reagan. So
you did?
The man who, because he asked, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? The man who coined the phrase.
When he coined the phrase, what did he mean? What was he referring to?
He said, well,
mommy,
when Dick Nixon destroyed America,
that's right.
We had Jimmy Carter come in and clean things up. Now, I know you're tired of Jimmy Carter and his peanuts. Mommy and I want to come back and gut the middle class. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Donor class?
Here we go.
Wouldn't it?
So what Reagan meant when he said
he meant a message of optimism. It's morning in America.
No,
let's, Frank.
I'm going to go get my eggs.
Okay, Frank, make your point, Frank.
Yeah, sure.
This
Reagan.
Is easy.
I love this guy, man.
Inflation at 13.6% when he took office. Interest rates at 20%. Unemployment at about 7 million.
I remember it was horrible.
Okay,
my parents were living there. 40%
was only
interest rate.
Okay, and remember the hostage crisis?
I sure do.
So we had a year of hostages, American hostages being held in Iran, and we had
those are the hostages that Reagan went behind the scenes and stymied the negotiations so he could have it as a
let's
campaign.
Let's not go there.
And
let's talk about the relationship we had with the Soviet Union at that time. How was that doing?
Tear down that wall,
Mr.
Gorbachev.
So
I used to make a lot of money.
So
my
the
Reagan
point
impression.
About that all is, What Reagan was talking about was the experience that the average person was having in their life to buy gas, to buy groceries, to buy a house. Just are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And the answer to that was a resounding no, just like it's a resounding no today.
Sure, but Frank, I don't buy the aesthetic of it, and I'll use Reagan
What do you mean aesthetic of it?
Because the aesthetic of the question, the desire is to be pointed and to weaponize your own emotions against your logic faculties, right? So I'll give you just a really quick example.
Go ahead. I'm with you.
Between 1982 and 1984, the United States went from being the world's largest creditor to the world's largest debtor.
Granted.
Ronald Reagan said in his own autobiography, the biggest mistake of his administration was adopting modern monetary theory and just saying, we'll just keep borrowing money.
Yep.
And so when people say, well, the Reagan eras were so great because he bought it. Okay, and started the debt cycle that we see today.
Listen, this is a rerun of what you were saying the other day.
It's not a rerun. I didn't mention Reagan at all, Frank. What are you talking about?
That was me. Your thinking is me.
Shut him up. Look, I'm not talking about any of that, Jack. I'm talking about what the average voter, perceives when they sit down with the ballot. And the questions they ask themselves, they don't say, is the deficit bigger? They don't care.
Yeah.
They care, okay, is are people invading a campus and calling for the death of Jews? They care, does it cost more for me to buy my eggs? Does it cost more for me to buy food? Does it cost more for me to buy gasoline? Can I afford to buy a house? That's what they care about. Those are kitchen table issues. All that other stuff is just blah, 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 blah. It's true.
Thank you.
What you said was true. Undeniably. Doesn't matter to the average voter.
And that's why I object to the aesthetic of the question, because people should be thinking about the fiscal responsibility of their country.
You know, we have a definition for should when I was coaching debate.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah. Ought to, but not necessarily will.
Okay. I love that.
That is right. That's classic debate.
All right. Okay. Well, I would say that I was critical. I did not attack those fine people who think that way.
I think, yes, you were applying your unusually precise and eye-opening, nuanced view of the world to people who don't think that way.
Informed and resourced view, you might say?
One might say. He must have read many studies.
Time to move on.
Okay.
Laura, what did you do that for?
So Frank, that's the... Frank.
That's the producer's horn of motion.
Yes,
I love it.
That's when Laura lets us know it's time to wrap it up.
I'm going to quit coming in.
Yeah. No.
No, that's for us. That's not for you, Frank. No, that's always for the host.
Are you watching the clock?
Hard time finding eggs. What may be to blame? So this was a piece that was written over at Cairo 7, and I do eat an unusual amount of eggs because I don't eat a lot of carbs, and so I have to make it up with fats. Frank knows this because we talk about
it. We're doing the same thing.
We talk about it for hours while we're eating our carb-free dinners together.
Wow.
Literally hours. And so... my objection to this is that there was, there was bird flu in other states. There were issues in other states.
Yeah.
I have not had a single, when I get my very expensive groceries delivered to my very expensive apartment, I have never, not one time, had the person who gets them off of the shelves for me, my servant over at Whole Foods, never, not once have they said, sorry, Mr. Stein, so sorry to bug you with this. We have no more eggs left. Never, not one time. So I don't understand this. Has anybody had a hard time finding eggs, or is this just Cairo 7 scraping the bottom of the barrel?
It's happening.
Really?
Yes, it's happening. One writer in the Tri-Cities actually wrote about it, and I happened to pull up the story because I got the straight skinny.
Okay, what's the skinny?
The skinny is that in 2019, the state of Washington passed a law that said you can't raise chickens without a foot. They have to have
the Cage-Free Act.
Cage-Free Act.
Okay.
Didn't take effect until this year.
Okay.
In January. Okay. And so you can no longer buy everyday caged chicken eggs. No more. You can't.
I'm in favor.
But here's the catch. Okay. In order to, it drives up the price for your eggs $2 to $5. Per dozen, I believe it is. And the reason that is because it costs roughly twice as much to have the technology to the equipment to do this.
Okay.
Okay. And then it takes three times as many people to manage it. Because, you know, think about it. When you got a chicken running around instead of in a little cage, mm-hmm. somebody's got to catch him. Right?
Rocky. That's the big, I'm hearing job creation.
Yeah, it is. What do you do? Spike, we found your next gig. You can be a chicken chaser.
Those days are past.
Yeah, you're
those days are behind me, Frank.
What?
I can't catch a chicken anymore. Look at this.
Well, if I cover you in corn.
Right. If I cover myself in feed and lay there,
and then as they come,
I try to just grab them really quick. That's it.
Alligator style.
Yeah. The only way. Put the feed in my mouth.
But anyway, that's the consequence. And this is, by the way, typical of Washington State, legislators mm-hmm. who said, we don't care about the consequence to everyday people. We're going to put this into effect. We don't care that it's going to boost the price of eggs. We don't care that it's going to fall heavy on burden on the producers.
Least who can afford it.
Oh, yeah. The stuff I saw from Iowa, I think, was the study said that it's likely to cause 20% less egg consumption by low-income people. So basically, you're making eggs too expensive for the poor. So, what a great idea.
But I just bought eggs from Whole Foods, which is basically like buying gold
from
Whole Foods, right?
Yes.
I paid $3 for a dozen eggs.
I don't know why. How did that work?
I don't know. It's Amazon Prime, Frank. I don't look at the dollar amount.
That's delivered, too, buddy.
It's delivered, right?
There's something wrong with that picture.
I'm buying eggs cage-free that at my grocer are closer to four-something a gallon.
Yeah.
Or a dozen gallons.
Right.
A gallon.
I don't see...
Be shelled.
But, okay, here's the other thing I noticed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that I looked at a map of the United States, and they were talking about high cost of living areas mm-hmm. versus low cost of living areas.
Yeah.
This is what happens when I'm surrounded by dads.
We
by
both
the way.
Doubled that. Oh,
I just
we did it together.
I just get dadded.
I felt
by you
it
guys.
Happen. I'm so sorry.
I just feel like this is like my gay dads right now.
Who you want us to shut up? Okay, just a minute. Here, Spike. Here, let me pull that over your.
No, okay. So the thing that I saw on this map is that in Washington State there are only two counties that count as being very high cost of living. Counties, and that's King County and that's Pierce County, right?
Correct.
So, and the rest of the state is actually median, right? It's with the rest of the country. So this, when you say like, oh, this is low cost, this is going to affect poor people or whatever it is, I think it's going to affect poor people in two counties. Just based on my observational data, everybody else is not having a hard time buying eggs. That's my read of it, right? Because
I don't think that's right.
Because if I'm living in a high cost of living area, a lot mm-hmm. of my money goes towards my very expensive apartment, transportation, so on and so forth.
Right.
If I'm living in the median, the cost is offset by me already living in a median.
No, incorrect. Look, let's take the Tri-Cities as a good example.
Okay.
The Tri-Cities is three cities. You have an enormous employer in the Hanford site that is providing good, solid, middle-class jobs,
okay?
Maybe even to upper middle class, depending on what you do. But that city is immediately adjacent to Pasco. Pasco, notoriously low income. Lots of people who are migrants from various walks of life.
A lot of agro.
Mm-hmm. And the surrounding area is very agro. And if you're living in Pasco, you're not getting cheaper prices just because you're adjacent to Richland and Kennewick. You pay basically the same prices. And so that's a good example of where you're going to have a consequence. Same thing probably in Yakima.
I'm saying that the fact that you are spending less to live where you are makes up for, meaning that
you can afford to buy expensive eggs.
You can afford to spend two more dollars on eggs, being that you're not spending the amount of mortgage like how I spend on my very expensive apartment that I live in alone, by the way, ladies.
I think your assumption is that it's cheap to live there. It's not. It's not. They suffer from the same. It's not like Seattle. I mean, my God, you know.
Yeah.
But it certainly is not what we grew up with in Western Washington, say 20 or 30 or 40 years ago.
Let me get one more story in here really quick, Frank, before we get out of here.
Alarm.
Whoop, that's the wrong one. There we go. Baby boomers have trillions squirreled away, and their kids might not see much of it. This is a story over at the New York Times, basically talking about the wealth transfer from baby boomers to their millennial children is underway, being that the baby boomers are all passing away, and mm-hmm. now millennials are all getting that sweet money. Now, when my dad died, he had set aside his life's sum for me. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he gave it all away to a Ugandan scammer, and so I didn't get a penny from
really?
Him.
Really?
That's
a true story?
Hand to God, my dad had about $160,000 plus his home that he had in New Hampshire. And when he passed away, well, I found out through his sister, by the way, New Hampshire has very antiquated laws.
Yeah.
So I'm the next of kin in that state. So they couldn't do any of the paperwork. Had to be me. So I'm saying, okay, well, what about the title to his house and what about his bank accounts? And then his sister gets really quiet. And then she says, well, he actually met a woman online. And through wire transfers, basically gave away everything that he ever owned to this person in the hopes that... Yeah, true story. So that's why I had to sue a millionaire to get rich, baby. You guys know what I'm talking about. $250,000.
Yeah, I do. I love the story. So basically, the story is true. There was nothing for boomers to pass down, but it doesn't pass down to you.
His grandpa wasn't a boomer, was he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, my dad was not. My dad was a boomer.
Your dad was a boomer.
Your granddad was a boomer.
Yeah, my dad was born 54.
Okay.
Your dad?
54?
Okay. Yeah, right there.
He's a boomer.
Allow me to point out that I'm the only boomer in these two rooms.
Wrong.
What do you mean wrong?
I'm a boomer, clam dip.
Dude, no, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
Born in 55, that was the last year.
No, it's not.
No, 54?
64 is the last boomer year.
No, no way.
Look it up, Frank.
Hold on, let me solve this.
Look it up.
I want to know this.
I'm the last boomer.
You are not.
I am. How much? Dinner?
Oh, no, you already owe me dinner.
No.
Okay, all right.
Let's hear it.
The United States Census Bureau. Can we get some serious music here? I think I've got some serious music here, because this is very, very serious. Ah, here we go. The United States Census Bureau defines baby boomers as, quote, directly, individuals born in the United States between mid-1946 and mid-1964.
That's the champagne.
I surrender.
Right there,
20 years? They count boomers as for 20 years?
That's what a generation is, Frank. It's a 20 to 25 year window.
I thought it was like 10.
Okay.
How old were you your mom when you were born?
Wait, what month were you born in?
January 63.
January 63?
I'm a boomer.
I was trying to get you dinner, Frank. Trust me,
I'm a boomer.
Well, I understand.
Your point
I'm a true boomer.
But your point is valid.
Frank Shires, we appreciate you coming in. We're out of time.
Well, that went well.
I thought it did, Frank.
You people are babies.
Thank you. See, like I said, your point is
all right. Frank Shires, you can find all of Frank's creative works at Shires Creative. And then also, Frank, what newspapers do you run your cartoons in?
There are 12 of them, once a week in the Kitsap Sun, and a whole bunch of the sound papers like Kent, Auburn.
Are they mostly regional?
Federal Way. Local.
Okay.
Or region, I guess.
Regional?
King County.
Okay.
A lot of King County weekly.
You've got national talent.
I would just say, if you look at the top left or right corner, you'll see Frank's little
signature
Shires.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. So, Frank, we appreciate you coming in every Friday at 2 o'clock, going to Grand Central and sending me passive aggressive text messages. Always appreciate it, my friend.
Next time, bring him a sandwich, would you?
Come on. President Joe Biden is returning to Washington State to bring cheer and goodwill and beg for money. And also, I'll finish my story about what happened to my mom.
With the horse, your mom's
my
horse.
My mom's horse. It's a great story.
No.
It's hilarious.
Recently?
No, this is years ago. My mom's got another horse that I paid for that she's very happy with.
Yes.
But we shall discuss all this when we get back right after this. We can do traffic, Spike, right? Southbound I-5, pretty bad.
That's why you don't have a license.
I mean, southbound I-5, this is looking like a pretty... It starts all the way back by Northgate. Wow. And then it ends all the way... where is that? First Hill?
Sure.
I'm looking at it, Aaron.
Okay, yeah.
And you got more over by the CID, southbound.
It's Friday. It's a typical Friday heavy traffic road. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Past West Seattle Bridge.
405 southbound. Jeez, man. This is the worst traffic I've ever seen. Hey, I can do traffic, right? Just like everybody else. I think I'm doing a pretty good job.
Right in the heart of downtown Bellevue. A little backed up there.
And there's your traffic update, everybody. So Joe Biden is going to be... Thank you, by the way, Aaron. Appreciate it, my friend. President Joe Biden's going to be returning to Washington State at the... he's going to be on Friday.
Yes, he is. Talk about traffic flow.
Talk about traffic that day. And so he's coming here to spread cheer and goodwill and also... Beg for money is what he's doing.
Yeah. Tear goodwill and his hands like this.
May I
fill them, will you?
Can I get a check? I just need a check.
How about something for the campaign?
So
you'll be hearing from me.
Thank you.
So,
thank you, Mr. President.
Do you guys know that people like just pay to meet the president?
I don't mean
like megacorps. I just mean like regular citizens. They'll pay for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 dinner. Just
like a boy band meet and greet.
It's a little bit, but without
kind of
the
old man.
It's without the whole like you are my fire. None of that. It's just we all sit down at a $10,000 plate dinner, and Joe Biden gets up there and he gives a speech. And then that's our campaign contribution is that $10,000.
Sure, and everybody wants a little something. They want the agenda of the administration. That's why they donate. That's why. And this is nothing new. It happens all the time. Both parties do it. They always have. I can remember Bill Clinton coming to town and shutting down traffic.
Yeah.
To pick up that sweet, sweet new Ed, that Gates kid.
Yeah.
With all the money and the bad haircut. He's got a check for me.
I'll say this. I understand that presidents have to go places. I wish that we went back to the train model of presidents because the traffic nightmare that you saw with Kamala Harris, it's a disaster. Or even when Nancy Pelosi came to speak, it is a disaster. These people show up like royalty from the Middle East. You know what I mean? They bring a literal army with them, and it is irritating. We should just get them hovercrafts and be done with it, right?
You know, I can't believe we can't put some helicopter technology to work here and keep them off our streets.
I'm just saying.
The motorcades are intrusive. Doesn't begin to do it justice.
Andrew, get me Joe Biden on the phone. I need to explain to him that he's going to disrupt my Friday afternoon.
I mean, this is serious because they're going to make it hard for you to believe.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
So my mom, I started this story about 45 minutes ago, which means that none of the people who were listening then are listening now.
Can you recap?
But I'll recap
Please.
For people. So we were talking about the Kentucky Derby and we were talking about horses. And then I decided to tell a story about a relationship with horses. My mom loves horses. I was raised around horses. I'm very good with horses. I'm the guy that when we go to somebody's house and they have a horse, who hops the fence to hang out with the horse. Do you know what I mean?
You hop, not the horse.
No. Because I have no fear around horses, I didn't know that people feared horses.
I'm terrified of horses.
Until I was about 15 or 16 years old, because I just thought that everybody knew how to be around a horse. But apparently, Laura, are you afraid of horses?
I was as a kid, and I'm not anymore.
Okay, that's very good. Good behavior.
I've learned how to be cautious around them. Tips and tricks for how to interact with a horse.
They're big, dumb dogs. They're fine. They're very stupid, but they're very loyal creatures. So my mom had a horse. She's had many horses over the course of her life, including the one that I bought for her recently.
She's not so happy about it.
Well, I mean, so this is how I bought my mom a horse really quick. Is that there was a horse that my mom was taking care of. His name is Ranger, and he's a very good boy. And the owner, he's a very expensive horse, by the way.
Okay.
And the owners are getting out of town. They're getting out of Dodge. And they say, if you pay for his paperwork, you can have him, basically, which is about $300 for a horse that's probably worth 10 times that.
That's
right?
Wonderful.
So I say, yeah, Mom, we'll go ahead and we'll get Ranger. Not realizing that I was also buying everything that came with Ranger, including his harness and his saddle and all of his various other expenses. So basically what I thought was going to be one of these turned into one of these, right? It just turned into, oh, by the way.
And one of those.
And then you got to Venmo this.
Six of these.
And then you got to get the vet. And then he's got to get reshoed. And then all of a sudden I could have bought a house, but instead I got my mom a horse. So my mom had a deaf horse. Her name was MJ, and she was a very beautiful quarter horse, painted, blue eyes, gorgeous horse that was deaf, stone deaf, and she taught it sign language so that she could run it and she could ride it, and it was a good horse, but also very skittish because she's deaf, very temperamental, pretty nippy. She would bite the other horses, and my mom had this horse for about 14 years, and then my mom calls me. She's in tears. MJ has passed away. She had a heart attack. Oh, it's very sad. So my mom says, can you come out and help me with the horse? I go, yeah, sure. I drive all the way. This is when I lived in California. My mom was like 2 hours away from me. Drive all the way out to my mom's ranch. And I see MJ, and she's got a little blanket over her. And my mom's deeply upset. And I say, Mom, do you want me to call the vet? We get MJ cremated. You get her ashes. And my mom says, you know what? I think it'd be better if we buried her right here. Just put her right in the ground. Which is common.
Is it common?
Because they're big and they're heavy. It's very expensive to cremate a horse.
Okay.
So my mom says, I'd rather have her be here so that, you know, I can always have this a little garden where she's buried. And so we go to the place on her property where they have buried other horses. and we get the backhoe and we dig a very, very deep hole. It's got to be about 8 feet deep.
Yeah.
And then what you do with a horse, because they have so much mass, is that you put concrete on top of it so the ground doesn't subside. You follow me?
Oh, okay, okay. So I do.
When they decompose, there's not a big old... Yeah. So if we drag the horse into the hole, and my mom says her final words to her horse, throws in the flowers, and then they start pouring the concrete. But the thing is, I don't know why I'm laughing. The thing is...
Sounds lovely.
Is that when we dragged her horse in there, her legs were up.
Okay.
Yeah. Not to the side. Because my mom was in such grief, nobody noticed, including myself. So when the guys finished pouring in the concrete, my mom looks in at her horse, and it's four legs. So my mom just busts out laughing, and I bust out laughing, and I say, do you want me to get in there and try to tip it over? And she says, no, I think that's fine.
Okay.
And so that was how we buried my mom's horse. Isn't that hilarious?
It's beautiful.
Think about what you'd think about at the time. Think about how you'd feel.
I thought it was pretty...
Wrong. It's not who we are, and we're going to fix that, too.
Thanks, Mr. President. We go dig up that horse and rebury it if you like. No, sir, appreciate that one. But that it just goes to show that even in tragedy, sometimes you can have a good laugh about it.
And you almost have to have a good laugh. It totally completes the circle of loss and grief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But still to this day...
That was MJ's gift to you and your mom.
Yeah. And still to this day, when my mom and I talk about that story, my mom will burst into tears laughing because it is so unbelievably funny that at no point in time in the entire sequence of events did people say,
notice,
so you guys, maybe we think we put her at like a 45 instead of a 90 degree. Maybe that would be good. Right. So, MJ is laid to rest facing up to God, right? As opposed to down to the devil. Hopefully we can do something similar for our elected leaders, right? When they pass on, right? We give them a nice funeral.
A nice eternal flame with arms and legs sticking up.
We can just have a good laugh, right? Whenever somebody dies, I think that's a good way to go about it. All right, we'll take a really quick break when we get back. Rescheduling marijuana has been on the president's agenda for many, many years.
Yeah, yeah.
Finally accomplished it this week. And there's an article over at MSN talking about what it means for Washington State's cannabis industry.
Yes.
Washington State has one of the largest cannabis industries in the nation. So what does it mean to take a drug that was previously Schedule 1, no use whatsoever, to Schedule 3, meaning some medicinal use as being controlled? We'll talk about it when we get back right after this. We have a YouTube channel as well, the Jack and Spike Show on YouTube, where we release spicy content that's not... It is actually very safe for air, but some of the stories we do, we can't say on air. Some of them, but not all of them.
Well, they're better told in a more casual environment. We can be ourselves
better.
A little more. Well, I mean... It's
visual
fair.
Element, right?
There you go. So,
for example, if you want to see Robert De Niro yelling at a bunch of protesters, if you want to see, you know, we're releasing a video this afternoon that I'm so excited about because we did some investigatory journalism on whether or not Donald Trump actually wears diapers or not, which we went down the rabbit hole, and it is not a joke. It is not a bit. Nope. There's actual receipts that we found, and we let the viewers make that, but you'll get to see it. When is it being released, Laura, this afternoon?
This evening. At 7 o'clock.
Should be earlier, Laura, but that's okay. Probably should
be. I'll reschedule it.
All right, thank you, Laura.
When do you want it to come out?
Probably like six.
Six?
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, Jack and Spike Show on YouTube, you can subscribe now. What does rescheduling marijuana mean for Washington State cannabis industry? Spike, I know you're all up on weed.
I am, and I kind of fumbled last time we tried the story because I got so emotional and excited about it, and I apologize.
Why did you get so excited about it? It's just weed.
It's not just weed, Jack. Not to some of us, man.
It's just
with the schedule being rescheduled from a Schedule 1 drug, which is the worst of all drugs and no medical benefits whatsoever, to Schedule 3, means that business owners in Washington who work in the recreational marijuana industry can now deduct business deductions from their taxes. Which means that they can now invest in their stores and their employees, and it'll be safer for marijuana stores. All these smash and grabs. The cost of securing a recreational marijuana store is prohibitive. The cost of adequate security and barriers to theft. Those are business deductions, legitimate business deductions every other business enjoys. Now that they've rescheduled this drug, those business deductions will be available to these businesses, and I think it's going to be better for everybody.
I met a guy when I was homeless. His name was Austin. I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. And he was a weed addict as a homeless guy. He was completely addicted to marijuana.
Slave to the
right. So what he had done is, because being homeless is kind of tough, is that around his encampment, which was behind the mall, by the way, he started growing pot plants in the wild. Oh, wow. And because he was such a weed addict, he was very successful at it. But it was kind of like watching proto-humans try to grow wheat for the first time. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Where he was like going down to the local reservoir and filling buckets with water and then bringing it back and doing his little drip system, which was basically piping that he had stolen from other work. Yeah, he was he's a real addict. So I asked him one time at his campsite, as I was blown out of my mind on heroin and homeless, I asked him, I said, Austin, don't you ever worry about the police coming back here? Because if the police come back here, they're going to rip up all your plants. The guy had like 12 plants. I mean, and they were getting up there in size, right? Okay. We're about maybe 50 yards from the parking lot at the mall. So it's not exactly like he was doing a really covert grow operation.
Did not care.
Right. So I said, Austin, are you ever worried about this? He goes, no, man. So if the cops come down here and they try to tear up my plants, I'd physically fight them. I said, what? I said, you're going to fight a cop? I go, Austin, if you fight a cop, they will shoot you. And he looks me dead in the eyes, and he says, brother, I would die for weed. And then he walked off into the woods, leaving me alone with his weed plants.
But you're a friend.
Right? So I'm just saying, man, you can't trust me. You just told me you would die for weed, and then you walk off into the green nothing. Like, what am I supposed to think? Like, he just literally just kind of assimilated back into the forest like the Predator or something like that. And I think to myself, I'm not that in love with anything.
Was that your moment that you needed to get clean?
That was my moment that I realized I should probably stop being homeless.
That's
right now.
That's what bottom looks like, isn't it?
Right. So, I mean, I love a lot of things. Cats, Pomeranians, money. I love all kinds of things, right, that are meaningful and precious to me, like money and wealth and power and prestige. Things that really matter in life, Spike, right?
I'm getting it.
I would not, if there was a big pile of money and a cop was pointing a gun at me, there you go.
You help yourself.
I love more than anything else? Myself.
Life.
Me.
Breathing.
I'm like, Austin, you know, life is very, very precious. Weed is dime a dozen. You get that's why they call it a dime bag. You get anywhere you want it, right?
Yeah.
So when people say that there's no such thing as a weed addict, I met the weed addict. I met the one that has encouraged all the other ones, right? It started with my buddy Austin. It's trickled down from that point to the rest of the world.
I think it might be a direct descendant of your friend Austin.
Austin, by the way, had a girlfriend who was into moon healing. So when his jaw got broken in a fight over weed, she refused to take him to the hospital, and she laid out river water in a bowl for 3 days under the full moon and then tried to get him to drink it. And when I was in his presence and listening to his pained screams, I said, Austin, I'm taking you to the hospital. And then I took him to the hospital.
Attaboy.
And that is my friend Austin. Love that guy. Andrew, A+, Nate Connors, you know you can't be doing the thinking man back there on
my baby.
Dude.
It's natural.
Talking about you're looking like a statuesque figure. Is that a Cairo radio zip up, my guy?
It is. It's Friday, baby.
Dang, Nate Connors, Laura, A+ today. Excellent work as the taskmaster of this fine radio program. Spike, I'll give you a solid C+.
Thanks, buddy.
Solid C+ today. Here's a quote of the day.
My GPA is over 2 now.
What's your name?
And I come out with some lemonade and a 1950s dress. Oh, honey, can I get you anything else? We're having meatloaf tonight.